Plymouth Rock Economics. Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. Economic uncertainty may be looming with this holiday season, but Marketplace's Steve Tripoli found no fear of spending at the place that tells the real story of the first Thanksgiving.
Even on a recent weekday, plenty of tourists mixed with loads of field-tripping schoolchildren at Plymouth Plantation. It's a recreation of the world the pilgrims stepped into in 1620 when they landed in what's now Plymouth, Massachusetts. The museum's Ivan Lipton says U.S. economic news may look gloomy, but business is up in places like this.
There's a significant trend, I think, lately for people to look for travel destinations that are focused on heritage and culture and history.
The plantation tells the story of not just pilgrims, but the native Wampanoag people. They'd been here for millennia when the English landed.
The stories that we tell about how those two cultures interacted have a great relevance to a lot of things in 21st century world.
For this is a hasty pudding. You know hasty pudding?
A role player in the recreated colonist village describes life there. It's a story at odds with many Thanksgiving legends.
We don't know for sure that turkey was on the table.
The museum's Jennifer Monack says the first Thanksgiving was probably less a harvest feast than a sort of diplomatic mission by two sides wary of each other. She says the Wampanoag may have come to gauge the English firepower they had heard and to show their numbers.
We can infer that it was probably a show of strength on the native side. What we understand is that the English had been practicing arms, and maybe the native wanted to come and find out what that was about.
And forget about all those pilgrim-filled paintings you've seen. The Wampanoag outnumbered the colonists 2-1 at that feast. They're still very much a part of modern Massachusetts. I'm Steve Tripoli for Marketplace.
Wall Street had a turkey of a day on Wednesday. The Dow sank 211 points. The Nasdaq was down 34 points. Meanwhile, the Nikkei closed up today by 51 points. In case you had any doubt how the subprime crisis in the U.S. is affecting other countries, consider what Japan's financial regulator said today. Japan's large banks had about $11 billion invested in products related to the U.S. subprime mortgage market at the end of September. Oil is still flirting with $100 a barrel today, but another sort of black gold is continuing to experience a boom time. I'm talking about coffee. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch says one old brand is planning to give itself away.
Maxwell House has been around for 115 years, but nowadays it's being hit with competition on all sides.
Coffee is right at the center place in marketing in America. Starbucks, McDonald's, Dunkin' Donuts, the whole coffee industry is exploding.
That's retail consultant Howard Davidowitz. On Wednesday, the busiest driving day of the year, Maxwell House set up shop at toll booths in 8 cities, including Chicago, Dallas, and Miami. Signs told drivers the toll was on the house.
This is one way to re-energize the Maxwell House brand, the famous good to the last drop line, which they've had forever.
Maxwell House's new slogan includes, "It's a new morning." The brand certainly hopes so, as it tries to gain market share on industry-leading Folgers. In Miami, I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Forget that kosher, organic, free-range bird you paid $6 a pound for. The makers of an alternative turkey say business is up. Fourth quarter sales of tofurkey are up 36% over last year. That means around 227,000 homes in the U.S. will be sitting down to a flavored vegan tofu roast later today. There's one family in the Midwest who has a lot to be thankful for, a multi-million dollar business idea that Sean Cole says they created as easy as ABC.
I'm just going to tell you the story the way it happened. About 5 years ago, Jera Deal and her husband Brad started playing a game with their eldest daughter. They'd basically tromp around Peoria, Illinois, alphabetizing the world around them.
We would letter hunt. So, for example, we would be at a park and we might find a maple leaf on the ground that made the outline of a W.
They started taking pictures of their finds. A silo made the letter I. A goalpost formed a nice H.
T would be the easiest to find, probably because there's so many crosses.
They photographed one of every letter, and then more than one of every letter. And then, 2 years ago, Jero was volunteering at her daughter's school and needed to find the teacher a wedding gift. So she arranged some of the pictures in a frame, spelling out the teacher's new last name.
Before we even walked into school with it, I showed the other room mom, who was room mother with me. She ordered 9.
Everybody wanted one. And a month later, they had a business called Sticks and Stones. This is all they make. Pictures of things that look like letters arranged in a frame to make words. You pick out the letters online, they frame them, and mail you the piece. Their projected sales for this year? $10 million.
It's almost a viral thing in that.
This is Brad.
Viral growth, because I just had somebody email me today that said, you have no idea how many people have seen your piece on our wall and asked for your website. And I said, well, our sales show that I kind of have an idea. I mean, no, I didn't tell you that. But
it's viral in more than one way. The whole family can't stop seeing letters everywhere. On a recent trip to New York,
people would walk by on the sidewalk and see me squatting down by this little railing by a building taking a picture of something on like a lamppost, you know?
And thinking he's insane.
What's wrong with this guy? Yeah.
There's a story like this behind every letter. For example, I asked them if we could bring the camera to a local playground, even though the sky was getting black. We hit pay dirt in the gazebo.
We can easily make an O right here out of this little guy.
Uh-huh. And then... But that's what makes their job so rewarding, they say. That and Oprah Winfrey bought one of their pieces as a wedding gift for Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes. Seriously. I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace.
On this day dedicated to food, you're probably grateful for your sense of taste. What about your sense of smell? Rachel Hertz has just written a book called The Scent of Desire. She says smell is the retailer's dream.
Cinnabon is a classic example, which uses the scent of its fabulous cinnamon buns to lure passersby to want to have a cinnamon bun. Actually, KFC is another one who's recently gotten on this bandwagon, and Exxon on the Run. They have been adding a coffee scent to their brewing kiosks, and apparently sales have increased 55% for coffee. So this is the example of literal scent marketing, where you use the scent that's obviously connected to what you're selling in order to augment sales.
Back to the Cinnabon KFC example, those places, they're enhancing the smell of their already existing smells that are coming out of the stores with the food they're making?
That's right. So they're either using their own real smells or they're actually using synthetics that are being pumped out into the environment where they're being sold. So you can kind of tell depending upon if they're actually really cooking in the establishment or if it's in a place like a sterile mall where they couldn't possibly be doing any baking and yet you're still getting this overwhelming aroma of cinnabon, let's just say.
Wild. Why don't you tell me a little bit about this bus shelter incident?
What happened there is it was the Got Milk, very successful advertising campaign that decided what it should do is add the scent of chocolate chip cookies. And what they did was this sort of blitz of scenting bus shelters in and around San Francisco. And the San Francisco commuting board basically pulled it instantly from their bus shelters. People were worried about what was the smell. You know, they didn't know what it was. And that's one of the issues with smell. If you don't know what it is, people are very suspicious about it.
Let me ask you about Iowa State and the pajamas.
In this particular case, they used two scents as a comparison. Both were rated as equally pleasant, but only one of them was able to augment the perceived value and desire to buy what in this case was a mock retail environment of women's pajamas and nightgowns and so forth, satin sleepwear. And what's interesting is that it's not just a pleasant scent, but a scent that is perceived as conceptually congruent with the items being sold that will yield a positive outcome.
What does the bedroom smell like? You also talk a little bit about olfactorily digitized cell phones.
Yeah, so this is an odd new invention that's come out of Japan, and you'll be able to digitize a scent that's in your environment and send it through your cell phone so that your friends can smell what you're smelling. So you're on the beach in Hawaii drinking a pina colada, and you pick that scent up and you send it to your jealous friends who are sitting in the snow at home in Wisconsin. It doesn't exist yet, but the idea is that it could possibly be something of the future.
Rachel Hertz is the new book of the Scent of Desire in Los Angeles. I'm Waking Up, and I'm Lisa Napoli. Happy Thanksgiving.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.